You're listening to AM 970, The Answer. And now, Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, the president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With me, we have the distinguished, very special guest, Reverend Dr. Calvin O. Butts III. He is the pastor of the internationally renowned Abyssinian Baptist Church in the city of New York and president of the State University College at Old Westbury. Welcome to Reaching Out.
Thank you, Brother Floyd. I'm happy to be here and anxious to get into our discussion.
Thank you. Thank you. You mean so much to our community for many, many years from, I would say, social issues. We were talking off air. You reformed the radio airwaves back in the 90s, rap music, and you said to the rappers, clean up your act.
Well, yes. We were concerned primarily about what was termed as gangster rap. This idiom described women by vulgar names. It encouraged violence against women, and it also encouraged crime, you know, carrying guns and threatening people. And we were fans. I was a fan of rap music because I think the artists are creative, they're lyrical, they're poetic. A number of accolades I could bestow on them. But these gangster rappers were taking away not only from the genius of rap music, but they were also destroying what I believed was the moral fiber of our community. They were sending messages that were not good, particularly for our young people. And they did not represent the best values of our community, nor of this nation.
And you had another campaign, and you titled it, you named it, kind of named it after yourself. You had a campaign against cigarette advertisement. It was called No Butts About It. I remember that.
Yeah, we were painting billboards, and we were protesting the proliferation of billboards in our community that advertised alcohol and tobacco. The truth is that alcohol and tobacco are the number one killers of poor people in the city of New York and in the United States of America and in the world. You can talk about other kinds of drugs like, what is this, K2 and marijuana and cocaine.
And opioids.
And opioids. But drinking, the consuming of alcohol and tobacco have really wreaked havoc on this nation. Automobile accidents, domestic violence, lung disease, heart disease, cardiovascular disease, in other words. And we had to say that the companies that were advertising these killers in our community had to stop. And one way that we could stop them was a kind of civil disobedience by painting over the billboards and saying, you cannot use slick images like Joe Camel, or you could not say that drinking a certain brand of alcohol or smoking a certain brand of cigarettes would give you fun and enjoyment and pleasure, really, when it would bring you death and ill health. We wanted to let the advertisers know, for instance, they were selling a malt liquor called, at that time, Power Master, that made you believe that you could be masterful and powerful. And we had to stop that. We had to say, we have a voice also, and we say no to this. Now, there were a number of people around the country and in different cities in the country who joined us in this campaign with good results. There used to be many, many, many more billboards and advertisements for alcohol and tobacco. But unfortunately, we could not wipe it all out. But at least we were trying to let people know that we were aware of this and that people should be on guard against the ills of alcohol and tobacco.
Well, you did a good job with that. We see very few billboards in our communities advertising alcohol and tobacco. Now, we want to talk to you because you are the president of the State University of New York at College at Old Westbury. Education reform.
I'm deeply concerned about education. My mantra, education and faith, the Tigris and the Euphrates of our redemption, twin rivers at the source of our liberation. Without a trained mind and an inspired heart, you will go nowhere. Here in the city of New York, I got an excellent education, Mr. Floyd. I went to the public schools, Lower East Side, PS 97 on Houston, across from Houston Street. I grew up in the, for a part of my life, in the Lillian Wall Projects.
Okay. Yeah.
I went to PS 92 in Queens and then to Russell Sage Junior High School in Forest Hills at the advent of open enrollment and busing. And then I graduated from Flushing High School, which I don't think exists any longer.
The building is there.
The building is there,
yeah,
but they chopped it up.
They chopped it up.
But in those days, I can call teachers' names like Zubak and Steinberg. They were excellent teachers. I can call Mandelbaum and so many more who were just Kearney, who were just excellent. And the schools, there was a division, of course. There was segregation, and that's what busing tried to address, right. Open enrollment. But I got an excellent education. And then when I started my tenure at Abyssinian, and I saw the question, why can't Johnny read? What? And I started to look at the quality of education in our city, and I became dismayed. And we visited the schools with parents. We saw book closets with unopened books and unused games and materials for teaching. We saw buildings in disrepair. We became very, very concerned about what was happening to our public education system, at one time one of the best in the world. And so we started advocating for reform. One of the things that needs to happen in our city is there needs to be an audit, a full audit, a forensic audit of the Department of Education, number one. All of this hoopla about specialized high schools. One of my children went to a specialized high school. I took the test, didn't get in, but I went to Flushing High School, which was an excellent school. Excellent.
Yes.
We need to talk about the equitable distribution of resources to all of our communities. You know, only a certain number of students who are high achievers will get into the Bronx Sciences and the Stuyvesants and the Brooklyn Techs et al. But the schools that really produce most of the very, very bright people were our public high schools.
Right.
And so therefore, you can't have one public high school with one standard and another with another standard. You can't have one receiving more dollars than another in another community. You have to make sure there's an equitable distribution, and I think it's important to have standards for the teachers. I believe that teachers ought to be paid more, even more than they're making now. I'm a staunch believer in that because they are part of the most important population we have. But working under the conditions that they do, and I built schools.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm not talking from somebody who hasn't done something. No, they can't. They can't possibly do their job with a classroom filled with 35 to 40 students, all high off sugar and whatever else they can grab as they run out of the house in the morning, and their hormones jumping all over the place in junior high school. 40 kids in a class would drive anybody, burn anybody out.
Right.
So they need different atmosphere. They need newer teaching equipment. They need to be paid more. And we need to make sure that they have all the resources that helps them to be productive and teach our children. There also needs to be new training. I think that one of our national administrations tried to get at this point. I don't think they did it well. But our teachers need to be retrained, particularly those who are in various sections. So there's a rural section of our country, but there's an urban section of our country. And those who work in rural sections need another kind of training than those who work in urban sections. And we must see that the teachers are trained to do their job and that they are proud of our culture and heritage as citizens of the United States of America, and that they teach our full history. All of us have been involved in the building of this nation, not just some of us.
Right.
And that needs to be a part of the curriculum.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With us is our very special guest, Reverend Dr. Calvin O. Butts III. And we are talking about issues affecting our community. Another important issue is housing. And I know you know housing because you have a housing complex up in Abyssinian. Tell us about your feelings on housing, the New York City public housing system, and what has occurred there.
Well, let's talk about first thing. I believe that poor people deserve quality housing. And I don't just mean poor people who don't have jobs and who may be homeless.
Right.
I mean the working poor.
The working poor.
So let's talk about who define that for us, Reverend Butts. Well, an example is a police officer who wants to live in New York City, who sees New York City as her or his home. And they happen to be married to a registered nurse bus driver.
That's quite common, yeah.
Yeah. And that's the working poor. People say, no, they make good salaries. Oh, no, not for New York. Not for the prices that are being charged for rent. One person running for mayor say the rent is too damn high. It is.
Yes, yes.
So the poor. And so, and then that's the working poor. And then there are those who are destitute. They for one reason or another, they're homeless, they're without employment. We can build that housing, but we need the cooperation of the real estate industry. Now, for those listening, many of you think that the NRA is a strong lobby. The NRA is child's play compared to the real estate lobby in the city of New York. The men and women there are driven by the market. They want to develop market rate housing and get the biggest return on their dollar. In a capitalist society, I can't blame them. But their ethics and morals are out of place. You know, you have to be concerned about all New Yorkers, not just some. And particularly those New Yorkers who deliver for us the services that we need to have a safe and healthy and livable city. And who are those people? Police officers? Fire persons, sanitation workers, nurses, teachers, you know, these men and women, and they are wonderful people, you know, across all religions, races, sexes, sexual orientations. They need a place to live. They want their children to be well educated. We can do this in New York. I've grown up in New York. I've seen it done. And we can have a city that can do this. And I have demonstrated that it can be done. Harlem, when I first arrived back in the early 70s, was a mess. You know, Frederick Douglass Boulevard, 8th Avenue, filled with junkies.
Yeah, I remember those days.
Schools crumbling, falling apart. And housing crumbling. Nobody, you know. The plan was to sweep through and just get rid of all rent stabilization, sweep through, just push the poor and the elderly out. And we said no. And we worked hard fighting with the city council. Interestingly enough, we had a friend in Ed Koch. You know, I had to fight with him. But Ed Koch finally, one day at Harlem Hospital, I said, look, we've sent you proposals and you haven't gotten back. He said, you haven't sent us anything. And he got mad as he can do or could do and walked out. But he called me the next morning and he said, Reverend Bunch, I'm sorry. They did not tell me. Your proposals are right here. They're good. And we started building along with the help of Councilman Fred Samuel. We started taking the old law tenements that were in rim and we bought them from the city for a very low price. And we started renovating them. And we, at one time, were the largest possessors of affordable housing in the Harlem community, and it sparked the new renaissance that you see uptown. The trouble is now we have to become the advocates.
Right.
In terms of advocates against the market rate housing, because they're still trying to come in. They're still pushing poor people out. And so we're fighting now with that same real estate industry that's trying to come in and say, oh, we want to build market rate housing. Well, we understand that. But a community has to have a mix of housing. You can't revive a community with just low-income housing. You have to have low-income housing, middle-income, and maybe some market-rate upper-income housing. That's agreeable. But for those real estate developers who come in with big dollars and think they're going to build only market-rate housing, they got another guest coming. They say, well, we want 20%. At one time, 20% was good for low-income and affordable housing. Not anymore. So if you come in, you got to build 40% now and 60% market rate. There must be a middle ground that we can reach. And so we'll walk away. Walk away. Then I'll find someone else. And they don't want to use union labor.
Yeah.
And that's not right, you know, because everybody deserves equity and fairness. And what we're seeing in the nation today with certain people trying to break up unions, this is insane. Because how are you going to ensure that people are treated fairly? And these are the people, see, I'm not a wealthy man.
Okay.
And
yes.
So if I get a parking ticket, I've got to go down to the Parking Violations Bureau. If I get a speeding ticket, I hate to admit this over the air, but I've got to go to the Department of Motor Vehicles. Well, when I walk in there, first of all, many people recognize me. They say, what are you doing here? Yet you send somebody to do this for you? He said, no, I'm fun. I got to do it myself.
You got to do it yourself.
But then you really see. You see the poor people online.
Right.
Then you really have a chance to talk to people.
Yes.
Many of our members from the Abyssinian Church live in public housing. So when they're ill, their pastor has to go see them.
In public housing.
In public housing.
So you see the conditions.
You see the workers. Yes. You get a chance to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you know, the elevators, you know, not working. And as a clergy person, I understand the need to raise the ethical and moral standards. You know, you can't have a 15-year-old deciding, well, I got to urinate on the elevator for fun so that everybody who gets in spells the urine and things like that. There's got to be a way to enforce regulations. It's dangerous sometimes. But then the men and women who patrol need to be backed up. So therefore, the lead paint, I've seen that over and over again. It's not a new issue.
No, it's not.
Not a new issue. No. You know, and we can address it rather than hearing the rumors that the real estate industry is trying to take over public housing and turn it into market rate housing.
Yes.
That's what we, and so we're becoming the advocates now. And I'm saying to your listeners, please be aware that money and power are really trying to take over our city. And the poor people who live here and make it run are being pushed out. And I don't care if you're black, white, Latino, Puerto Rican, Dominicana. I don't care if you're Muslim, Christian, Jewish. It happens to us all. And I think that at the top, we need somebody who really understands what poor people are wrestling with every day. And so, yes, we built housing. We built schools. You know, we built a brand new high school. Now we're about to build another one here in the city for our lower school. So we understand these issues. And we don't build schools. This whole thing about charters, there's no fight with charters. If the charters want to come, they have to take their chances. But we deserve, the people of New York deserve a Department of Education that distributes equitably its resources coming from our tax base to all of our schools. And we don't need this slow creep of privatization trying to wiggle its way in. Now, some charters, I think the Harlem Children's Zone doing a great job.
Yeah, there's Jeffrey Canada. Yeah,
I think
sure.
He's doing a great job.
Yeah.
But Jeff comes from a place, and this is what I'm talking about, of concern.
Yes.
Real concern for the poor people who live in the community.
He's not there for money.
Right.
He's there for concern.
And Sister Isom, who's there now, who's taking his place, she comes from a concern for poor people. And that's what you've got to have. And it's not just a textbook concern. It's a concern of living where the people. I live in Harlem, you know. I commute back and forth to Long Island with the university, but I live in Harlem. And my children were raised there. So, and when I travel the city, it doesn't matter where I am. I see this, whether it's Bed-Stuy, I see this slow creep.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't matter where I am, you know. In the Bronx, I see this slow creep.
See, slow creep.
You know, of moneyed interests, market rate housing, privatization of schools. And we must be careful because our children are coming behind. They have to inherit this, our grandchildren. And I just believe that on behalf of New Yorkers, we must be a voice for quality education from our Department of Education. Healthcare, man, our hospitals are. Look, I've been hospitalized in New York City, and I've received great care, you know, from the nurses, from the physicians. And they have to be clean and safe, whether it's Harlem Hospital or Metropolitan Hospital or Lincoln Hospital. Recently, I've had to go into Lincoln Hospital many times. And they've been very polite, very nice, you know. I've looked around. One of our members received excellent care there. This should be for all New Yorkers, right, man, all New Yorkers. Right. And our hospitals need to be safe. We had a deacon in our church. His name was Black. And I was a young minister visiting the hospital. He was a hospital police officer. And he used to see us come in, and he would speak to us and say, "Oh, young reverend," he said, "good to see you." He said, "You're going to visit us." He said, "Have great visits. Make sure you pray with them and encourage them." This was a safety officer.
Yes. One of our members, and I was one too.
Yeah. Oh, really? He was a safety officer. I said, wow. And I remember the pride he had in his job. In fact, I remember the pride all New Yorkers had in their jobs. And we see that deteriorating. And I think it comes from the fact that many of us feel that the leadership of our nation and the leadership of our nation, leadership, particularly our nation, is filtering down to our municipalities. And some of our leadership just out after money and whatever they can do to get reelected, rather than here go back to caring for our city.
So, Reverend, it sounds like you want to make an announcement or you're mulling over something.
There you go, Floyd. I am. You know, all these years, I'd be on TV, I'd be on the radio and said, I'm going to run for something. But right now, looking at what's coming from our national leadership, I may have to seriously consider that. Let me tell you, I got time for a story.
Yes.
Adam Clayton Powell, Jr., they were deciding in the days when backroom deals were made who was going to be the next president of the United States. And the room was filled with these big Southern politicians and everybody, the Northern elites, and they were out west of Western. And they were drinking scotch, and, you know, and the smoke was all in the room. And they said, we need somebody who's charismatic. We need somebody who has a long history in government. We need somebody who's got a lot of legislation passed. And we need somebody who speaks to all of the people with power. And somebody said, oh, we've got the person to be our next president. They said, who? Said, Adam Clayton Powell, Jr. Said, the room got quiet. The smoke disappeared from the air. And the ice melted in the drinks. And somebody from the background said, yeah, but the country's not ready for a Baptist preacher. They laughed and moved on to the next thing. I think that our city is ready for someone who comes from an ethical and moral base. I didn't say that person had to be perfect or didn't have faults. But first and foremost, I am a clergyman. I'm a sinner, but I believe that I could bring some leadership to our city that might make a difference. I've demonstrated that in Harlem. I've demonstrated that at our church, and I've demonstrated that at the state university. There's evidence of my stewardship. It's a serious consideration now, Floyd, serious consideration.
And I'm sure you're going to have a lot of support because New York is hungering for some leadership. Our country is hungering for leadership.
Our country is hungering for leadership.
And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this segment of Reaching Out. This discussion is just too important to leave it here. Why don't you stay and we come back next week and we continue talking?
Whatever you want to do.
You're listening to Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd. A very special guest is Reverend Calvin Butts, and he'll be back next week on the next show. And we'll continue the discussion.
Thanks for listening to Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. Join us each and every Saturday night at 7, right here on AM 970, The Answer.